Royalty in Ruins, Chapter 53. Nehemiah accomplishes the impossible. The royal letters to the governors of the provinces along Nehemiah's route obtained prompt assistance for him. No enemy dared give trouble to the official guarded by the power of the Persian king. However, his arrival in Jerusalem with a military escort, showing that he had come on some important mission, sparked the jealousy of heathen tribes who had often heaped injury and insult on the Jews. Leading out in this evil work were certain chiefs of these tribes, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. They watched Nehemiah with critical eyes and tried to obstruct and hinder his work. Knowing that bitter enemies stood ready to oppose him, Nehemiah concealed his mission from them until he could study the situation and form his plans. He hoped to set the people at work before his enemies knew what was happening. Choosing a few men whom he knew, Nehemiah told them what he wanted to accomplish and the plans he proposed. He enlisted their interest and assistance at once. On the third night after his arrival, Nehemiah rose at midnight and went out with a few trusted companions to view the ruins of Jerusalem. On his mule, he passed from one part of the city to another, surveying the broken-down walls and gates of the city. Painful thoughts filled his sorrowful heart as he gazed on the shattered defenses of Jerusalem. Memories of Israel's past greatness stood in sharp contrast with the evidences of her humiliation. In secrecy and silence, Nehemiah completed his circuit, and the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. The remainder of the night he spent in prayer, for the morning would call for earnest effort to rally his dispirited countrymen. Nehemiah carried a royal order requiring the inhabitants to cooperate in rebuilding the walls of the city. But he preferred to gain the sympathy of the people, knowing that a union of hearts was essential in the work. When he called the people together, he presented arguments designed to unite the various groups. Nehemiah's hearers did not know of his midnight circuit the night before, but the fact that he was able to speak of the condition of the city with accuracy and in detail astonished them. How Nehemiah won support. Nehemiah presented before the people their disgrace among the heathen. Their religion was dishonored, their God blasphemed. He told them that in a distant land he had earnestly asked for the favor of heaven in their behalf and had determined to request permission from the king to come to their aid. He had asked God that the king might also grant him authority and give him the help needed for the work, and his prayer had been answered in such a way as to show that the plan was of the Lord. Then Nehemiah asked the people directly whether they would take advantage of this opportunity and rise up to build the wall. With new courage, they said with one voice, "Let us rise up and build." Then they set their hands to this good work. Nehemiah's enthusiasm and determination were contagious. Each man became a Nehemiah in his turn and helped to strengthen the heart and hand of his neighbor. When Israel's enemies heard what the Jews were hoping to accomplish, they laughed. "What is this thing that you are doing? Will you rebel against the king?" But Nehemiah answered, "The God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build." Nehemiah's example wins the day. Among the first to catch Nehemiah's spirit were the priests. Because of their influential position, they could advance or hinder the work, and their cooperation at the beginning contributed much to its success. The majority came up nobly to their duty, and these faithful men have honorable mention in the Book of God. But a few, the nobles from Tekoa, did not put their shoulders to the work of their Lord. In every religious movement, some hold back, refusing to help. Heaven keeps a record of every neglected opportunity to do service for God, and there, too, every deed of faith and love is held in everlasting remembrance. The people in general acted from patriotism and zeal. Able men organized the citizens into companies, each leader making himself responsible for a certain part of the wall. Some built, each in front of his own house. With tireless vigilance, Nehemiah supervised the building, noting the problems and providing for emergencies. Along the entire 3 miles of wall, the people constantly felt his influence. He encouraged the fearful, motivated the slackers, and approved the diligent. And he kept a constant eye on the movements of their enemies at a distance, who were conversing as if plotting mischief. Nehemiah did not forget the source of his strength. He constantly lifted up his heart to the great overseer of all. "The God of heaven himself," he exclaimed, "will prosper us." The words thrilled the hearts of all the workers on the wall. But Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem tried to cause division among the workmen. They ridiculed the efforts of the builders, predicting failure. "What are these feeble Jews doing?" exclaimed Sanballat mockingly. "Will they fortify themselves? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish? Stones that are burned?" Tobiah added. "Whatever they build, if even a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall." Soon, the builders had to guard continually against the plots of their adversaries, who conspired to draw Nehemiah into their traps. False-hearted Jews helped the treacherous effort. The report spread that Nehemiah was plotting against the Persian monarch, intending to set himself as king over Israel, and that all who aided him were traitors. But the people had a mind to work. The project went forward until the gaps were filled and the entire wall built up to half its intended height. Building with one hand, fighting with the other. The enemies of Israel were filled with rage. They had not dared use violence, for they knew of the king's orders and feared that actively opposing Nehemiah might bring on them the monarch's displeasure. But now they themselves became guilty of the crime of which they had accused Nehemiah. All of them conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem. At the same time, some of the leading Jews turned against the project and tried to discourage Nehemiah. "The strength of the laborers is failing, and there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build the wall." Discouragement came from still another source. The Jews who dwelt near them, taking no part in the work, repeated the reports of their enemies to create discontent. But ridicule and threats only inspired Nehemiah to greater watchfulness. His courage remained high. "We made our prayer to our God," he declares, "and set a watch against them, day and night. Therefore, I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall, at the openings, and I set the people according to their families, with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, 'Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses.' All of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work. So it was from that time on that half of my servants worked on construction, while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows, and more armor. Those who carried burdens loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction, and with the other held a weapon. Priests were stationed on different parts of the wall, bearing the sacred trumpets. They sounded the alarm if danger approached any part of the wall. So we labored in the work, and half of the men held the spears from daybreak until the stars appeared. Nehemiah now required those who had been living outside Jerusalem to camp within the walls, to guard the work and to be ready for duty in the morning. This would prevent the enemy from attacking the workmen as they went to and from their homes. Not even during the short time given to sleep did Nehemiah and his companions put off their clothing or lay aside their armor. The opposition that the builders in Nehemiah's day met from open enemies and pretended friends is an example of the experience that people who work for God today will have. Enemies and friends hurl scorn and accusations at them, and if conditions allow, the enemy uses more cruel and violent measures. Among those who profess to support God's cause are those who lay his cause open to the attacks of his bitterest foes. Even some who desire the work of God to prosper will weaken the hands of his servants by reporting and half-believing the slanders of his adversaries. But, like Nehemiah, God's people are neither to fear their enemies nor despise them. Putting their trust in God, they are to go steadily forward, committing to his care the cause for which they stand. In every crisis, God's people may confidently declare, "If God is for us, who can be against us?" Romans chapter 8, verse 31. However craftily Satan may lay his plots, God can bring all the schemes to nothing. He is in the work, and no one can prevent its ultimate success.